show of hands out there in podcast land. How many of you, with just under 4 minutes to play Monday night, the Titans having surrendered two touchdowns in the span of a minute following a muffed punt and a fumble, how many of you knew the Titans were going to win that game? Of course, just about everybody, just like us here on this panel at Believe in Titans. It was obvious what was going to happen in the last couple minutes of that game, right? Right? No, not right. But there is much joy in Titans land this week following the improbable 28-27 victory over the Miami Dolphins. So improbable, in fact, that the Titans are the first team since 2016 to come back from two touchdowns down in the final 3 minutes of the game and win, and the only team ever to do so and win in regulation, which they did. Little help from analytics. They elected to go for two after their first touchdown, converted that. Of course, then drove the field again. Got another touchdown, so 15 points in the final couple minutes, and they dispatched the Dolphins. Go figure this, the first road win for the Titans this season, first home loss for the Dolphins. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to have not expected that outcome, but here we are. The Titans are at 5-8. Their playoff chances, in case you're interested, according to the New York Times, currently at 0.4%. So if you're thinking this one threw them back into the fringe of the playoff race, not so much. But it was exciting. And quarterback Will Levis, I think, among some other folks, has created a little more excitement for the final few weeks of the season here. And we will talk about such things on this episode of Believe in Titans, as always, with former Titans cornerback Denard Walker. Denard, how are you?
I'm doing good this evening. How are you doing, David?
Doing great. And John Glennon of the Nashville Post. John, how are you?
I'm doing well. Hope you guys are.
Doing great. And I am David Beauclair. So, Denard, let's just get right to the point here. Take me through your thought process there, the last few minutes of the game. How dismayed were you at the turnovers and the 14-point deficit, and how amazed were you when the Titans answered the bell there?
Well, David, I wasn't amazed. I was a little kind of stuck a little bit in the last few minutes of the game. But if you think about it, it was the first three quarters that I really focused on, because we talked about when Tennessee comes out and they play fast, they typically end fast. And when you watch this team Monday night, no one was giving the Titans a chance. And it always seems like when this team is down and out, they seem to find a way to at least get going and get back on track and prove all of the naysayers wrong. I looked at the fact that Miami squandered a few points. If you think about the first series when Tua botched the fumble between the center and the quarterback exchange, you're talking about the 44-yard field goal by Miami that was blocked. I mean, those little things is what kept Tennessee in the game. And then I looked at the way that the defense, I mean, just played the whole game. You're talking about the secondary. None of us was giving this secondary a chance. They're going against what Tyreek Hill coming into this contest, what, nearly 1,500 receiving yards. He's getting ready to surpass that of Calvin Johnson in 2012, that 1,964. And the fact that the way that they hit Jaylen Waddle almost knocked him out of the game on that first series. Those are the kind of little things that when you see that from Tennessee, I'm always going to give this team a chance to win. And that's exactly what they did Monday, is that Miami allowed them, they didn't capitalize on some of those mistakes, and they end up getting beat. And that's what happens in this game.
Yeah. To your point about the Titans winning when they're counted out, that was sort of my reaction to my big takeaway. And we've had the discussion on here a little bit lately. Could this devolve into a situation where Mike Vrabel's job is in trouble? And one thing that we have seen from Mike Vrabel teams pretty consistently in his five plus seasons here is that they win games when you think they're not supposed to, and they're the biggest underdog to win this season in the NFL now at 13.5 point underdogs in that game. So that to me said very much so Mike Vrabel still has a firm hand on this team. Guys are buying in, guys are believing in the game plan, and no, the Titans are not as talented a team as the Miami Dolphins. But as we always say here too, the gap from one team to the next is not nearly as big in the NFL as most fans, I think, tend to think it is. And when you can make those sorts of plays, like you turn them over in the red zone early, you block a field goal, you hang around, you muddy the water a little bit. That's the way this team likes to win games. I think it was a really good night for Mike Vrabel in that regard. John, as you watched it play out, what was your sort of in the moment analysis?
Yeah, I think what I ended up being kind of most stunned by or most amazed by was the speed of those last two scoring drives. When you take into account, you go back over this lengthy road losing streak that we've been talking about forever. 9 games on the road, 10 games away from Nissan that they have lost. They hadn't scored more than 16 points in any of those games total. All right, so you're down to 4 minutes left, and you've only scored 13 points. You're hardly thinking, okay, here's a Titans team that's going to run, march right down the field and score in a couple possessions. That is exactly what they did. You look at those two scoring drives, 9 plays, 80 yards, 1:54, and the second one, the game-winning drive, 4 plays, 61 yards in just 26 seconds. So you're looking at two touchdown drives for the Tennessee Titans on the road that took all of 2:20, to materialize. And you pull 15 points out of that and you win the game. That just resonated with me because of how difficult it's been for the Titans to score anywhere, but especially on the road. And the other thing in that same time frame that was particularly kind of impressive and a little bit stunning as well, that I mean the defense, for all what we just talked about with the offense there, the defense still needed two back-to-back stops against the best offense in the NFL in order to get that win. Now, granted, Tyreek Hill was not playing, and the Dolphins were down a couple of linemen by then as well. But on the other end of things, Titans didn't have Jeffrey Simmons. The Titans didn't have Christian Fulton. Still, they get two back-to-back stops there. The second one, obviously the Dolphins only needed a field goal to win the game. Could only get one first down before the Titans turn them over on downs. So a total for the Dolphins in those last two drives of one first down, and I believe just 9 plays. So those two things to me, the speed of two touchdown scoring drives. And the ability of the D to stop, the best offense in the game really left a mark with me.
John makes a good point, Denard, that injuries are everywhere. Every team has to deal with them. But how big a factor was Tyreek Hill getting hurt and missing a good chunk of this game? How vital is he to everything that kind of the Dolphins do on offense?
It's everything. I mean, he's their secret weapon. What is he? He came into this game with 1,481, which is the most receiving yards through 12 games. And if you look at it, he's on pace to surpass that I just alluded to earlier, Calvin Johnson. But let's just take a look at this. If I like Cedric Wilson, he's a good player, but he's not Tyreek Hill. And if you look at that game, he became the centerpiece of that offense. And Jalen Waddle was a little banged up. Even though he came back into the game, he still wasn't the same when he took that hit in the first quarter by Amani Hooker. And when you lose your playmaker, let's be honest, Miami, they started going down. They got a lot of players started getting injured. You saw Tennessee started to capitalize, and I think that's what gave that defense They kind of got galvanized when Tyreek went out of the game. Great job by Sean Murphy Bunting on that hit on Tyreek. Because I tell you what, it almost looked like a horse collar. I mean, that call, it could have went.
It was close, not, yeah.
It was close. It was very close. But when you think
horse about, collar and a hip drop, actually.
Well, you know what helped his cause is the fact that he was falling. So as he's falling, that kind of, I think that must shield it, the referee, if, as opposed to him standing up. But when you lose a player of that caliber, David, that we're talking about a player that is ultimately could be this year's MVP. And when you lose that, you lose pretty much, what, 50% of your offense. And Mike McDaniel said it, is that when Tyreek went out of the game, it changed up the play calling. He could no longer call the plays that he's used to calling with Tyreek in the game. He had to go to Cedric Wilson Jr. And that just, that wasn't, it was a matchup that Tennessee, when you look at Sean Murphy Bunting, that he was pretty much lined up against the whole time. Sean Murphy Bunting pretty much took him out of the game.
Yeah, all of a sudden there was, what, early in the fourth quarter, Wilson had a couple of catches, and you felt like, oh, okay, the Dolphins have found something here. But, Sean Murphy Bunting showed the skill that cornerbacks need above all others, and that's the ability to forget. I mean, he didn't have a perfect night, but he stayed in the fight all night. And there at the end too, you got to give the secondary credit. You know, Harold Landry gets the sack that effectively ends the game, but Tua had nowhere to go with the ball there as he was looking. It was a remarkable performance in a lot of ways. I think even without Tyreek Hill, yes, he is so much a part of what they do. But there have been passing games that have less than Cedric Wilson and Jaylen Waddle and the backs coming out of the backfield and whatnot that have beat up the Titans secondary this year. And this was a good performance for them. One that should inspire a little confidence. Of course, there will be some people kind of wringing their hands saying, watch the Titans play themselves out of a top 10 draft pick now or whatever. John, as you look at this, is this a springboard to good things to come? Is this, will there be benefits immediately in the short term? Will it be more long term? Is it just a nice win, but it's not going to do anything for them? How do you view the impact of such an unlikely outcome here?
Yeah, I think certainly in terms of what it means for the team, I think you have to look at the younger players, and obviously first and foremost is Will Levis, as we've referenced, first rookie quarterback to throw over 300 yards on Monday Night Football. Sort of a coming out performance for him, if you don't consider the very first game he played in. And some of the other younger players too. You look at Tajay Spears, I think he had almost 90 yards receiving. Chigakonkwo, who we haven't seen much of this year, started making some nice contributions as well. And you remember too that you've got a couple of rookies playing on that left side on the offensive lines, Skoronski, Shaylen Duncan. So these are the kind of games I think that can kind of, give them that extra little boost of confidence. They learn from it. It makes them better players, presumably in the long run. Now, if the Titans, kind of flail their way down the stretch here again, and ultimately, this game proves to be the difference between a certain draft pick and not a certain draft pick, I think it's a different story at that point. I think at that point, you kind of wish that, hey, as exciting and as entertaining as it was, man, I'd rather have that great left tackle that we just missed by one or two draft picks because we won that game. So it comes down to what the Titans do with this win, I think, and especially those young players. I wonder too, I have to think a win like this has to re-energize their coaching staff and Mike Vrabel in particular. I mean, this has been a slog, for a long time coming into this game. They had lost, 15 of 19 games. We've talked about the long road losing streak. And I don't know about you guys, but when I looked at Mike Vrabel on the sidelines last night in the early going, there wasn't a lot of confidence radiating the way I usually see from Mike Vrabel. It looked to me that the word that detached almost I came to my mind. It was almost like, geez, we got what we got. This is what's going to happen tonight, and I'm kind of resigned to it almost. But I thought as the game went along, it picked up his spirits. It energized Mike Vrabel as well, and I think, there's something to that for not only for him, for the coaching staff as well. And then lastly, I think, for the players, they know that what the playoff odds are. They know that there's virtually no chance they're making the postseason. So for them, a game like this at least gives them something, a little shot of energy, to kind of head into this final month of a season, even when there's no carrot at the end of it. Hey, you've got at least something, as I say, a little spark, a little boost, something that can vault you into that last month.
Yeah, I agree with you about Vrabel, and I think his body language has gotten worse as the year has gone on. I even texted somebody that early in the game. I said he just looks like he's ready for the sky to fall in at any point. And I've said that earlier on here. I'd love to play poker with the guy because I think he just has a terrible poker face. But Denard, talk about this. Now you came into the league your first 2 years. The Titans were 8-8 both years. You won three of your last five your first year in the league. Lost a couple late in the year, won a couple early in December, and then finished with a couple losses in 1998. But you guys were obviously competitive, and nobody was tanking then. Nobody was clearly trying to position for a draft pick. If this team can get to 8-9 or somehow even 9-8, run the table here. What would that do for what and do you think this victory Monday night can act as sort of a slingshot in that regard?
It does a lot. I mean, it's momentum going into next season. And this team could have tanked it, but that's not a Mike Vrabel team. We haven't seen no team from Tennessee, at least since I've been covering the last few years, ever tank it. They're just not that. I wouldn't say they're not the greatest team in the world. They're not what we're accustomed to seeing the last few years. But this team came out Monday in front of a national televised audience, and they went out and they played phenomenal. And when you look at the way that a Mike Vrabel team is, you talk about Mike Vrabel, you're talking about a former player. So again, they take on that DNA of that team, regardless of the situation. And before, it's weird, John, you was talking about the mannerisms of Coach Vrabel before the game. When I saw this game, David, like pregame before the start of the game, I saw Miami players very relaxed. They were smiling. You saw Tua and the backup quarterback. They were waving at the camera before the game. And I said, you know what? This team from Miami, they're very loose. And then they showed a clip of Tennessee on the sideline, and they had a picture. They had a Derek sitting there like he was all business. And their demeanor was, we're coming out here and play. We're not going to be embarrassed. And that's what you want to see. That means that you still have fight in you. You know why, David? Because you're still being paid. And people are still critiquing you. They're still looking at you. And if you go out there and tank it, you might not have a job next season. And so what I love about this team also is their resiliency. You think about it. Everything to me starts with the offensive line. When I looked at the first half, Will was only sacked one time. One time he was sacked. How many times did they get to two in the first half? Twice.
Yeah.
I mean, again, those are little things. I mean, we've been talking about, when are players like Arden Key going to step up? It's like he's gotten better the last few weeks. We've been calling his name more. And that's what you want to see. You want to gain momentum right now, because what that momentum would do is it would go into offseason. And that is kind of where you start your next season, is what you do from last season. We did that when I was in Tennessee. I mean, think about this, David. We were 16-16 my first 2 years. Okay. We were 26-6 the last 2 years. And guess where that started? How we played down the stretch. We go in 98, we beat Jacksonville, beat them down there. They were supposed to win the AFC Central. We spoiled that. And then we went against the best team that year in the league in 1998. That was the Minnesota Vikings. What did that do? Even though we lost that game, we realized, hey, we're pretty good. Let's take this into next season, and we end up going to the Super Bowl in 99. So you don't know what can happen. You know, you need that. You need to keep playing, and you need to generate some kind of momentum going forward.
Yeah, you held that high-powered Vikings offense to just 26 points in a game at Vanderbilt. I remember that was first time I saw Randy Moss live and in person, and boy, that guy could run. I think it's important to note here too that the Monday night outcome, I think, in a lot of ways lifted the spirits of Titans fans and many folks around Nashville following the news a day earlier that a Titans great, Frank Wycheck, had died. I think the fight and the toughness that this team showed, I think many fans interpreted it as a fitting tribute, almost, if you will, to Frank, who was 52 years old, died of a result of a fall at his home in Chattanooga, where he was living these days, to be close to his children. Denard, I'm gonna come back to you. You were teammates with Frank for 4 years. When you watched him, when you think of Frank Wycheck, what immediately comes to mind for you?
Frank was amazing. He was underrated as a player. And I had a chance every day when I first got to training camp to watch Frank Wycheck. This wasn't just your average player. Frank Wycheck was pretty much our whole offense, along with Eddie George, for a long time. And you're talking about consistency. He was the model of consistency, David. Frank had the most sure hands on the team. It just seemed like when it was game time, you know, Frank just, I mean, he took it to a new level. He practiced hard. He was a great teammate. He meant a lot to me as a player, because I was very fortunate that when I got drafted out here, I'm a young rookie. There was a lot of veterans on that team. And what really gave me real confidence is the fact that veterans like Frank would pull me aside one day and he said, you know, Rook, you're playing well. And when a veteran like Frank, who was a big part of our offense, a big part of our team, he sits back and he's giving you that kind of a compliment, you know what it ends up doing? It just makes you want to go out there and do more. It makes you want to continue to get better. And it was players like Frank Wycheck I missed when I left in free agency in Tennessee, because I wasn't blessed to be around people like Frank. And I'm not saying that because Frank passed. I mean, I'm hurting. But at the same time, Frank was what I call a high character individual who just so happened to be also a great tight end for us.
Yeah. You know, John, in 1997, you covered this team for the Memphis Commercial Appeal. Titans, of course, played home games in Memphis that year as the Tennessee Oilers. And you know, as I think back, you know, everybody knew who Eddie George was. Football fans certainly knew who Bruce Matthews was. Steve McNair, you know, people knew of his, and particularly in the Memphis area, they knew who Steve McNair was. But I think of Frank Wycheck sort of as the first guy that fans in Tennessee sort of maybe didn't know but got to know and love. You know, when you think back to those early years, how important was Frank in terms of, you know, yes, there was a popularity issue early on, but how, you know, how important do you see Frank in terms of the ultimate love affair that exists now between this franchise and most of the state, pretty much?
Yeah, you know, I think back to that year, of course, and as you mentioned, that, you know, the home games were played in Memphis, and I remember one of Jeff Calkins' columns, and it was early on. In fact, I guess it was probably before the season started, and one of the members of the Oilers Titans now his name eludes me, of course, but had decided to retire after a fairly lengthy career. And Jeff Calkins' column, you know, Memphis Commercial Appeal at the time, basically the gist of it was, should we care? You know, what connections do we have in Tennessee to somebody who played his entire career in Houston and just happened to be here for, you know, a matter of weeks and months? And I think Frank Wycheck was, as you say, kind of one of those guys who crossed that bridge, who turned people in Tennessee who might have initially, whether it was Memphis or Nashville, might have turned up their noses and said, we have no ties to these guys. This isn't the University of Tennessee. This is not Vanderbilt or Memphis University. Why are we supporting these guys? I think he was one of those guys that sort of won fans over. A very everyman personality. You know, it's amazing. As I say, I only covered him the 1 year, so I didn't know him as well as you guys did over the years. But have we ever run into anybody, you know, who said, I wasn't a real big Frank Whitecheck fan. Didn't really like the guy. I don't think I've ever run into anyone who said that. You know, it just hasn't happened. And he was a guy, he connected, you know, not only his football playing style, kind of that rough and tumble blue collar style, but then off the field as well. I think he made a great connection with fans. And that one from everything from being such a, you know, an entertaining, lively personality, one that would eventually, you know, be on the radio for many years, to also a guy who did so well in raising money, you know, for Special Olympics in particular. You know, those are the kind of bonds, those are the kinds of connections, I think, that eventually, you know, led Tennessee fans all over the state to enjoying and appreciating the Oilers and Titans, you know, and I think Frank Whitecheck had a huge impact in doing that during his tenure here.
Yeah, and it's funny. I as I've talked about Frank the last couple of days, you know, Denard, you talk about what important player he was for this team, how good he was, and he was a, you know, a three-time Pro Bowler in 2000. He was a second-team All-Pro. He's one of 18 tight ends in NFL history with at least 500 career catches. I mean, there's no debating the guy was a terrific football player. But I think a lot of people don't know or didn't realize about Frank is how insecure he was about his place on the team. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, he was a prolific high school running back who went to the University of Maryland and was told, you're not good enough. We need you to play tight end. And he didn't really like that, but he became the leading receiver among tight ends in that program's history. Then he gets drafted in the sixth round by Washington in 1993. Great, right? You know, you're a draft pick. You're going to have opportunities in this league. And for the better part of 2 years there, had a hard time seeing the field, had a hard time carving out a role for himself. So by the time he came to the Oilers in 95, he was pretty well shaken and trying to figure out, you know, do I have a future in this game or whatnot? And he never, even as he became such an important part of the Titans, he never lost that fear. I mean, he acted like an undrafted rookie in a lot of ways. And I'd talk to him and, you know, we'd have our conversation about whatever, and I'd say, thanks, Frank. I always appreciate it. And he'd say, yeah, Dave, I'm going to miss you. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, I'm getting cut next week. I'm like, you're not getting cut next week, Frank. And, you know, we'd had that conversation, I don't know how many times, but I think that attitude was so important to his success because it kept him locked in at all times and kept him working to try and do things exactly right so that the coaches or the manager or whomever never had an excuse to say, well, look at what Frank just did. Let's just go ahead and cut him here. And that takes me to, of course, the, you know, his most famous moment, the lateral and the Music City Miracle that people in Buffalo want to debate to this day. And Frank and I have talked about that a number of times over the years. And it struck me the first time he said it to me, and he said it pretty much every time. He said, I know it was a legal play because it was my job to throw it backward. So, you know, and I think when you know Frank and you know about Frank's journey and his approach to things and how he was always trying to be perfect, that's, you know, that's an important distinction. Frank wasn't thinking, my job is just to get the ball over over to that side of the field to Derek Mason, who was supposed to be there, or, you know, in this case, to Kevin Dyson, who was there on that particular day. He's thinking, I have to throw a lateral so that this is a legal play, and then we'll see what happens from there. So when people ask me about the Music City Miracle and whether it was a legal play or not, I always reference that story, and I tell them, if Frank Wycheck says it was a lateral, then it was a lateral, because that's exactly what he intended to do. And it'll be we'll see what the Titans do to honor him this Sunday, and I assume going forward the rest of this season. They're of course, interestingly enough, back at home on Sunday against the Houston Texans. They will be wearing the Oilers throwbacks for the second time this season, and sort of sticking it to the Texans and the Houston fans a little bit that way. I guess there's going to be a question as to whether or not C.J. Stroud is going to be at quarterback for the Texans. He sustained a concussion on Sunday, and we all know that's not one you just come back from quickly. So as we look ahead to Sunday, Denard, this is the one team in the division the Titans haven't played yet. The Texans have been a big surprise. What do you think? What are you looking for to happen in this game Sunday?
You know what I want to see? I want to see if – I don't want to see a team like we saw in Atlanta, and then you come back the next week and you lay an egg. I don't want to see that. What you want to see, how would they go forward from here? I mean, it's been inconsistency when you describe this team all season. And what I would like – great teams – and what great teams are able to do, David, is they pick up where they left off. So I want to see if they take that momentum from this game Monday night into the game Sunday, and – you're playing at home and you're wearing the old, you're going old school when you're talking about sticking it to Houston. I mean, there's going to be a lot of emotions in this game. So I just want to see if this team is going to pick it up and pick up where they left off Sunday. And if, are they going to continue to look the way that they look Monday night on defense? I want to see how well they play, especially in the back half. I want to see if they get this running game generated. And I just want to see if they will come out and play the way that he played against Miami. I just want to, that's all the thing I want to see, because it seems like one week we talk about this team, it's like they look amazing, they're back, like the game against Atlanta, and then they come back and it's kind of like, what happened? So it's like the tale of two ends. What would we see? Would we see the team that played the way that they played in Cleveland, or would we see the team that we saw Monday night against Miami?
John, DeAndre Hopkins had a number of really big games for the Texans against the Titans. What are the chances DeAndre Hopkins has a big game against the Texans for the Titans Sunday?
I think it's an increasingly good chance. And the reason I say that is just because, despite the fact that the Titans have no one else really in terms of wide receivers right now to throw to, DeAndre Hopkins is still putting up huge numbers. You know, Will Levis has thrown to him 12 times in each of the last two games. Came through with 7 catches, 122 yards, and a TD this week. So I think, as much as teams are focusing on him, he is beating them. So I think he is a big game. And I think the Texans are struggling with injury on offense. You mentioned C.J. Stroud. Also, Tank Dell is out. Dalton Schultz and Nico Collins are likely out as well. I think the Titans have a fairly decent chance of making it 2 in a row here at home.
Yeah, I'm with Denard. I want to see some carryover from Monday night. I want to see that okay, we learned something about ourselves, that there's no going back, as you know, it's not 2 steps back after 3 steps forward here on Monday night. It feels like a real opportunity for the Titans to win another one and maybe build some momentum like Denard talked about for the first time this year. We, of course, will be watching along with all of you, and we will be back next week to talk about it. Until then, thanks as always for listening to Believe in Titans.